The views expressed on this program are those of the host and guests and are not necessarily those of the Information Radio Network, its affiliates, stations, or advertisers.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend, Dr. Russell Blaylock. And those of you who don't take the Russell Blaylock letter really should. I take it and look forward to it coming every month, and we've been taking it for many years. And it simply goes into so many of the things having to do with medicine, the things that you can do to improve your own health. Because, of course, unfortunately, most doctors, I believe, are totally dedicated to helping you, but there is so much information that is not given to the doctors today. Why? Because it's an organized effort on the part of many of the pharmaceutical companies to withhold information so they can sell their exorbitantly priced drugs. And when you're talking about oral cancer drugs that cost you $1,500, $2,000 a month, And people are already strapped as far as paying for it. Some of the intravenous drugs are even far more expensive than that. Why? And there are other things that can be done to help you as far as cancer is concerned, but you're not going to hear about that, and your doctors don't know about it. Well, this evening, Dr. Blaylock's going to be talking about, I believe, some things that can be done as far as congestive heart failure, but I'm going to let Dr. Blaylock tell you the story. Good evening, Russell. How are you?
Good evening.
Why don't you just pick the story up?
This is actually going to be the next two of my newsletters, the next 2 months in two parts. And it's concerned with nutritional treatment of congestive heart failure. And the interesting thing about congestive heart failure is while there's a slight decrease in the number of deaths from heart attacks, which is about a million cases a year, with congestive heart failure, there's 5 million cases, and instead of going down, they're going up. And the death from congestive heart failure is also rising substantially. So we see that there's a major problem with one of the really large killers of the population in the United States. Now, we have 5 million cases of congestive heart failure a year, and Europe has 10 million cases. Brazil has about 5 million cases of congestive heart failure. So it's a worldwide problem. And interestingly, the Journal of the American Medical Association recently put out a study in which they found that only 11% of the cardiologists are practicing treating heart disease with scientifically based treatments. Most of them are just sort of doing things that they think will help and they're not sure, and there's no real good scientific studies to back it up. Well, actually, it's much worse than the article in the Journal of American Medical Association portrayed, because there's a whole group of treatments that are nutritional that have a far greater impact on preventing death and disability from congestive heart failure that's being almost completely ignored.
Well, now, when you speak of 5 million cases, are you talking about cases or people who die of congestive heart failure?
It's 5 million cases of...
All right, the people under treatment then.
Excuse me?
The people that are under treatment for...
Right, people under treatment, okay. But cardiovascular disease overall makes up 41% of all deaths in the United States each year.
All right, fine. You go right ahead.
So it's a huge segment of the serious disease in our country. Now, in a series of my newsletters, what I keep emphasizing to people is that most diseases...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. You were just saying that you were emphasizing that most diseases... Pick the story up.
Yeah, most diseases that we're looking at, the chronic diseases, the major diseases that are responsible for death and disability, are due to chronic inflammation. Related to chronic inflammation. Well, the interesting thing about heart failure, they're now finding that, in fact, that seems to be the major cause of at least the progression of congestive heart failure to the point of death or the need for a heart transplant. You know, the heart is a hollow muscle, and it works extremely hard. It pumps about 100,000 times in a 24-hour day. It's pumping 2,000 gallons of blood during that time. That's traveling through 60,000 miles of blood vessels, about 2.5 times around the Earth. So it's an organ that works extremely hard, and it never really rests. Even during diastole, it's not resting. So the heart has to constantly have a supply of oxygen. Its cells have to be healthy in order to be able to carry out this vital function constantly, because even the brain, which is we consider the person, it's not going to work very long if the heart can't supply it with blood and oxygen and its nutrients. So we see that the heart is at the center of life itself, because it's what keeps the rest of the human body alive. Well, when they started looking at people who had congestive heart failure, trying to figure out what is the cause of this disorder. Well, we know there's a lot of related conditions. For instance, people who have hypertension, particularly uncontrolled hypertension, tend to go into heart failure. People who've had multiple heart attacks can go into heart failure. People with valvular disease in the heart, where the valves are not working properly, the heart has to work harder, and that tends to throw them into heart failure. But the actual etiology, what's actually causing the heart failure, has kind of escaped the medical profession and the research world until recently. And back in 1990, a physician got to looking at this and measuring various parameters, and he found out that people who have heart disease have a high level of an inflammatory chemical called tumor necrosis factor alpha, or TNF-alpha. And their level is about 10 times higher than a normal person. And that as the disease progresses, the level of this inflammatory cytokine goes up even higher. And people who have the terminal...
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and here's Dr. Russell Blaylock, simply talking about congestive heart failure, that most people who have congestive heart failure have an inflammatory change, something called a tumor necrosis factor, and there seems to be a direct relationship between the level of the tumor necrosis factor and the progression of the heart disease. Certainly, people who have had multiple heart attacks will get congestive heart failure. People who have a valvular disease will get congestive heart failure. People with hypertension will get congestive heart failure. But there seems to be this common factor, this tumor necrosis factor, that has been found to be directly related to the progression of the disease. And I can tell you that I'd already, of course, took care of many people during my years in medicine with congestive heart failure, but until my valve really got, aortic valve got so bad, I had congestive heart failure, and I suddenly realized, I can't lay down at night, I've got swelling in my legs, and fortunately, truly miraculous improvement after I had my heart valve replaced, but certainly there is this problem with the possibility of recurrent congestive heart failure. So pick the story up there, Russell.
Well, when we look at some of these early studies, when they found this elevated inflammation in the heart, and that the progression of the disease is directly related independently to these measures of this inflammation, then they started looking at, well, let's look at some of the other inflammatory markers. They looked at interleukin-6. It seemed to be an even better marker than tumor necrosis factor alpha. And then they looked at the highly sensitive C-reactive protein measure, which any doctor can do. And what they found is there's a very strong correlation between the rate of failure of that heart and whether you're going to end up needing a heart transplant and the level of that C-reactive protein. So then they were curious, well, is this just a reaction to the failure, or is this actually causing the failure? And so they injected animals with these different inflammatory chemicals and found out it could destroy the heart. It did destroy the muscle fibers and the conduction, electrical conduction system of the heart. So it not only seemed to be an indicator of heart failure, but it seemed to be causing to a large degree the progression of this heart failure. When they looked at people who were in the final stages of heart failure, these levels were astronomical, as much as 12-fold higher. And so as you're looking at this, you start thinking, well, what if we block these inflammatory chemicals? Will that help heart failure patients? Well, they used a drug that just blocks tumor necrosis factor alpha, and it didn't really do a whole lot. And the reason is because there's more inflammatory chemicals than just that one, and you really need to block them all. And so when they started doing some studies recently that attempted to block total inflammation in the heart, they began to see there was some significant improvement occurring. Then they looked at another avenue to see, well, why would all of this be triggered anyway? What's causing the inflammation? Well, two things really stood out. One of them was they noticed in people who were in stage 4 heart failure, that's the very end point, they have so much in backup of the blood, the venous blood, because the heart can't pump it, it's backing up. It engorges the vessels in the wall of the intestine. And that engorged blood doesn't transmit the food stuff very well, and the gut gets sort of leaky, so the bacteria in the colon begin to leak into the blood. That triggers an immune reaction and causes these inflammatory factors to rise very high levels. Well, they also discover the heart itself can produce its own inflammatory chemicals. Well, the result of all these studies, then they started looking at, well, okay, we know the heart's inflamed. We know it's playing a major role in the progression of this heart failure. What can we do about it? Well, none of the drugs seemed to have a big impact, but the ones we knew that did, like the digitalis drugs and the angiotensin blockers, when you looked at them, you found out, well, actually, they're anti-inflammatory drugs. And so it may be that the reason that they're having some effect is that they're reducing inflammation. And then as they began to look at the heart that was under this type of stress, they said, well, the heart requires an enormous amount of energy. And so they looked at, well, what's the main fuel for the heart muscle? What food does it use? Well, it uses what we call long-chain fatty acids. That's major fats in your blood. That's its primary fuel. And they looked at people with congestive failure and found out they really had an impairment of the ability of their hearts to produce energy. And the secondary fuel was glucose. And that it was impaired as well. The metabolism of both of those fuels were significantly impaired in heart failure. Well, we know that coenzyme Q10 is a part of the energy production in cells. It's one of the major key points of energy production. So the idea was, let's feed coenzyme Q10 to people with heart failure and see if it helps. Well, so far, over the last 20 years, they've studied over 1,000 heart failure patients through a number of studies in which they've done double-blind placebo-controlled studies. And what they found was virtually in every case, coenzyme Q10 at least improved the symptoms. That is, they were less short of breath. They could walk further without becoming exhausted. They were more independent, more exercise tolerant. And individual studies indicated that it was actually improving strength of the heart muscle. The heart could pump better. It was pumping the blood better, what we call ejection fraction. And when they looked at the size of the heart on the x-rays, the heart was actually returning back more to a normal size.
Well, now, of course, one of the things about Lipitor and the statin drugs is it suppresses CoQ10, and since most people are not taking supplements, in many respects, then wouldn't the statins be doing more harm than good?
Well, and that was one of the observations early on in the statin drug controversy, was that because statins interfere with the formation of coenzyme Q10 in the body, that severe depletion in the heart not only would worsen congestive heart failure, but could actually bring it on. And there was a question, because of this last 20 years of use of statins, is this in fact why we're seeing a tremendous rise in the number of cases of congestive heart failure? And when you give people on statin drugs an extra supplemental coenzyme Q10, they get a lot better. Not only does their heart function better, but they have more energy because the same CoQ10 is used in all the other muscles as well. Well, some of the interesting things they did in some of the individual studies was when they looked at people who were put on this CoQ10, not only did they get symptomatically better, but they changed their classification. Now, we use the New York Heart Association functional classification, and it's graded from grade 1, which is the minor form, all the way to grade 4, which is terminal heart failure. And they found that a large percentage of patients on CoQ10 improved at least one classification point. And some of them, about 1.8%, improved three classification points. That means they go from a class 4 terminal all the way to where they just had some shortness of breath but were functional. So this was quite a dramatic improvement in heart function. Well, unfortunately, despite all these years of studying CoQ10, showing its benefit, using objective tests to prove it and quantify it, most cardiologists are still not using CoQ10 in their heart failure patients. And in fact, one study, they did only patients in class 4 that were on a list for heart transplants. And what they found is those patients subjectively improved. They could walk further. They were less short of breath. They had less swelling. Even though their heart function and studies didn't change, they felt a lot better and had more energy, and their heart seemed to be working better. So if you could get that sort of improvement in a patient that's waiting for a heart transplant, the millions of other people certainly should benefit from coenzyme Q10. Now, another energy supplement they looked at was L-carnitine. Now, L-carnitine functions in the body in moving the long-chain fatty acids inside of the mitochondria and where it can be metabolized to produce energy. So it made sense if long-chain fatty acids is the main fuel for the heart, the L-carnitine should improve the heart function. And so like the CoQ10, they did a lot of studies, and what they found out is most patients improve, and some improve quite significantly on various forms of L-carnitine. Well, the interesting thing about the heart is that L-carnitine is so important, it has its own special carnitine transporter, which means it draws the carnitine out of the blood and concentrates it in the heart. So the level of L-carnitine in the heart is much higher than it is in the blood because it's so essential to heart function. And when they looked at heart patients in failure, all of them had very low L-carnitine levels in their heart, just like they had very low CoQ10 levels in their heart. So the studies have consistently shown improvement not only in heart function but also in one of the big killers in this disorder, and that's arrhythmias, abnormal heartbeat. So that it was quite potent in preventing the fatal arrhythmias in people with congestive heart failure.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Russ Blaylock right here at Radio Liberty. All right, Russell, let's pick the story up. You've already talked about the advantages of CoQ10 and L-carnitine, and certainly, but, you know, certainly I don't think that the average...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances? Even things which can cause sickness or disease. If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Basically, most people who die of cardiac disease are dying of arrhythmias, and certainly magnesium is so vitally important in preventing the arrhythmias, the tachycardias that can really be lethal. And certainly only recently are at least a few of the cardiologists using this, although the importance of magnesium has been known for a long period of time, and I will tell you my wife has me on all of the things so far that Russell is talking about, and I'm doing pretty well for AD with had congestive heart failure, and I really have no symptoms of it at the present time. So go right ahead, Russell.
Another thing that was looked at that's very important is taurine. Taurine is an amino acid. We call these one of the sulfur amino acids. And taurine has been shown to do a number of things that improve heart function. One, it regulates the amount of calcium in the heart muscle. Calcium is the major signaling molecule inside of the heart muscle. So that's a very important function, and it helps prevent arrhythmia as well. It's a powerful antioxidant. It's been shown to reduce the risk of atherosclerosis. It lowers blood pressure, and it improves the strength of the heart muscle. So it's doing a lot of things to improve the function of the heart in the cases of congestive heart failure. Many other things are finding a lot of use in congestive heart failure, like resveratrol. Which is extracted from the skin of grapes. And this flavonoid has been shown in tests where they use animals to produce congestive heart failure and heart attacks, has been shown to significantly reduce the size of the damage to the heart by a heart attack, improve the ability of the heart to pump blood quite dramatically. Another is another part of the grape, and that's the grape seed. People take grape seed extract. It's called a proanthocyanidin. And when they tested it on the hearts of animals that were in heart failure, they found that the animals that they fed this grape seed extract to were quite resistant to the heart attack. So it protected the heart muscle very powerfully, and it's a powerful antioxidant. Is one of the ways that it works. Now, another one that's a big surprise was to a lot of people, but not to the person that's a researcher in heart disease, was pyruvate. Pyruvate is part of the chemicals that your body uses to create energy. When you eat glucose or carbohydrates and they're broken down to glucose, they're converted to pyruvate. Well, pyruvate is being shown to be one of the very powerful protectants of the heart muscle. It provides the heart muscle with a lot of energy, strengthens the heart muscle, reduces arrhythmias. When they tested it in animals who had been given heart attacks, it significantly protected the heart muscle against the damage of the heart attack. It strengthened the heart of the test subjects with congestive heart failure very dramatically, both in animal experiments and in humans. They saw a very significant improvement in heart function. And it's also interesting that the pyruvate helps prevent the leaky gut syndrome, where these bacteria were flowing into the bloodstream. They tend to stop that activity. So that is another effect of pyruvate, which exceeded expectations. And another effect of the pyruvate is it lowered blood pressure. A lot of people who have congestive heart failure have very high blood pressure. The pyruvate tends to lower the blood pressure, as does both L-carnitine and coenzyme Q10. When you use them in combination plus magnesium, you get an even better effect at lowering blood pressure and easing some of that stress off of that heart muscle.
All right. Well, I guess this evening is Dr. Russ Blaylock. We're talking really about the treatment of congestive heart failure and the things that you can certainly take to help them. What about digitalis? Is there a place for digitalis, the treatment of congestive heart failure?
Yeah, digitalis has been an old standby for a long time, and basically what it does is improves the strength of the heart muscle. But the problem is if the heart muscle is filled with free radicals and doesn't have its energy, eventually it's going to wear out anyway, despite the digitalis. So the digitalis is just sort of a way to keep the heart beating until it completely wears out.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. This is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, I guess it's Dr. Russell Blaylock. So go right ahead, and so basically digitalis then would be a supplement to all the things that you're talking about. What about Lasix, things like that? Are they important?
Well, they're important for acute care. You know, if a person comes in and congestive heart failure and is extremely short of breath and going into complete failure, these things like the digitalis and the diuretics are necessary to save their life. Now, long-term use, as I pointed out with the magnesium example, can have some deleterious effects because if you're on diuretics, you're losing a lot of your magnesium, and that actually makes you progress a lot faster. Using the digitalis is like having a car that has dirty pistons and bad rings and a dirty carburetor. Well, if you just keep putting gas in it, it'll run, and you put higher octane gas, it'll run a little bit better, but you're wearing the engine out. You need to correct everything, and that's what's wrong with the heart, is the heart is being severely damaged by enormous numbers of free radicals. It's depleted in its energy. It can no longer make energy efficiently. It's damaging the proteins of the heart muscle and destroying heart muscle, and the electrical system of the heart's being damaged. So you got to do more than just make the heart work harder, and that's what digitalis does. You've got to repair some of these things. You need to reduce those free radicals. You need to supply the heart with energy. You need to protect its electrical system from excitotoxins. So these are the type of things I'm describing. Is all of these things do that. Coenzyme Q10, L-carnitine, taurine, and magnesium are all potent antioxidants. So they help protect that muscle. They supply it with more energy. They're doing all of these things we talk about. Now, the other thing you need to do is reduce stress. We know that stress plays a big role in congestive heart failure. And there's an interesting study they did on people with significant heart failure. They tried what is described as music therapy. And what they had them do is listen to some real soothing music once a week for 45 minutes for 10 weeks in a row. And what they found is that the patients who were listening to the music...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Blaylock. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Chris Russell is simply talking about what can be done to help the heart. And basically, he mentioned taurine. He's mentioned a number of things that can be used to try to get the heart working, to try to cut down the inflammatory cytokines, to try to, of course, help the electronic function of the heart. And certainly, as he mentions, digitalis will make the heart function better, but it's really not the solution because it's only treating the symptom and not the foundation of the disease. And the same thing true with the diuretics. They're important, but they don't approach getting the heart back to where it should be and functioning normally, or as close to normal as you can get as you get older. Under any circumstances, before we go on, Russell, could you like to tell our listeners how they could get the Blaylock newsletter?
Yeah, the best way to do it is go to my website, which is www.russellblaylockmd.com. RussellBlaylockMD.com, and you can get the newsletter through that. And it has some free information. I post some of the articles I've published on there that you can download, and a whole page of free information on various subjects.
Well, let me just say that I look forward to getting that newsletter every month when it comes. Right, I make a copy for my wife. She wants to read it, so I read it. And so we keep them all filed away. We have them going back many years. A wonderful source of information. I enjoy it, and I think probably the listeners and the audience would. It's not that expensive. But I will tell you, it's just loaded with information that will help you as far as your health is concerned. So go right ahead, Russell.
Yeah, I was discussing reducing stress by using music therapy, and they divided these severe congestive heart failure patients into two groups. One listened to music and the other didn't, and they listened to music 45 minutes once a week for 10 weeks, and they measured various heart tests to make it objective, and what they found out is that the heart function in the people that were listening to music improved significantly, and when they measured their interleukin-6, which is a measure of inflammation from the heart, it was significantly lower in the people who were listening to the music, and the number of hospitalizations for the congestive heart failure fell significantly in the people listening to the music. So here's something rather simple to do, is just spend 45 minutes listening to relaxing music, and you can significantly improve your heart function in that way as well. Now, one of the really impressive things I found in the study of congestive heart failure prevention as well as treatment was that there's appears to be, from a number of studies, that the cause of the high rates of heart failure is vitamin D deficiency. They did some epidemiologic studies where they look at large populations of people during different seasons of the year, and they found out that during the winter time there's a lot more admissions. And so they measured their vitamin D levels and found out the people who had congestive heart failure consistently had the lowest vitamin D levels, and that if you looked at the scale of people with congestive heart failure, that is the grade 1 versus grade 4, the most severe, the people with the most severe heart disease had the lowest vitamin D level. And we've known for a long time that black people have the highest rates of congestive heart failure and the highest death rate from congestive heart failure. Well, ironically, they also have the lowest vitamin D levels. So as we're looking at this at different ways, we're finding that vitamin D always seems to pop up in the equation. And so they've done a lot of really interesting studies in the vitamin D area to see exactly what this has to do with the heart. Well, vitamin D regulates inflammation. That's one of its main functions. It's a modulator of inflammation. So that if you have normal levels, higher levels, it tends to reduce inflammation all over your body. And it stimulates the production of certain chemicals like interleukin-10 that reduces inflammation. So if inflammation is the cause or the major reason that the heart fails, vitamin D would be expected to be high on the list of things to prevent that. And that's exactly what we seem to be finding, is that it is playing a major role. One of the studies...
Could I just ask you how much of vitamin D should people be taking a day, and would that be D3?
Well, it depends a lot on how much sun you're exposed to. It depends on your age, and it depends on the amount of pigmentation in your skin. Black people have to have 10 times as much sun exposure to produce the same amount of vitamin D as a light-skinned person. Now, you see, in Africa, normally they were not wearing the clothes they wear here, so they were exposed to a lot of intense sun so they could maintain their vitamin D level. Well, as they in the United States wearing clothing, a lot living in northern latitudes, they're exposed to a considerably less amount of sunlight. And so they're not producing the vitamin D, and that's consistently what we're finding when they measure the vitamin D in the black population, it's extremely low vitamin D levels, and it's playing a big role in congestive heart failure as well. And those types of studies have been done in several places across the United States. One of the impressive studies of vitamin D found that not only did it reduce the heart attack, incidence of heart attack and congestive heart failure, but it also reduced the number of medications they need so that they could start getting off some of the medications. Their heart function improved on the vitamin D intake. Now, a normal person that's not in the sun a lot needs about 2,000 units of vitamin D3 a day. Vitamin D3 is the functional form of vitamin D. You can buy that as a supplement. It'll say D3 on it. If you're an older person, you're not exposed to the sun very much, you stay indoors mostly, you should probably take as much as 5,000 units a day.
Well, that's just what I do take, so go right ahead.
Right. And most people now are avoiding the sun, or if they go in the sun, they're using skin blockers. Well, that blocks the formation of vitamin D in the skin, which is the major source. You don't get a lot of vitamin D from your food. The amount you get from milk has almost no impact on your blood level of vitamin D3. So the government recommendations for vitamin D were far too low, and now they've admitted it and recommending much higher levels. So they're recommending at least 2,000 units for the average person. And in some cases, even I've recommended people take as much as 10,000 units. Now, as you get older, you have more difficulty making vitamin D, even if you're in the sun. Your ability to produce it declines. So they need extra vitamin D as well, even though they're in the sun. So this combination of the sun blockers, people staying indoors more, tends to dramatically lower vitamin D level. And it's estimated that at least 70% of the American population is deficient in vitamin D. And I would suspect that the level is probably a lot worse than that. It's probably as much as 80 or 85% of the population is deficient in vitamin D. Another connection to vitamin D, it was shown that people who have very low vitamin D levels tend to produce calcification of their tissues. We've learned that if you have calcification of your arteries, that's a very bad prognosis for heart failure and for heart attacks. It puts you in a very high risk category. Well, there's a direct correlation between calcification of your arteries and your vitamin D level. So the people that are most deficient have the greatest calcification. People with normal calcium with vitamin D levels tend to have very little calcification in your arteries. So that's another indication that vitamin D is playing a major role in this problem. And I would suspect that probably the reason or one of the reasons we're seeing such a high incidence of heart failure is the extreme degree of vitamin D deficiency in the United States and the obsession with avoiding sun rays and using skin blockers. Now, another cause of congestive heart failure has been shown is mercury. Mercury poisons the enzymes in the heart that are used to make energy, and it dramatically increases free radical generation in the heart. And they found that in heart failure patients, The amount of mercury is, I think the measure was 22,000 times normal levels or acceptable levels. So they have extremely high levels of mercury concentrated in their heart muscle. Well, what is the source of this mercury? Well, it's dental amalgam. It's vaccinations with mercury in it, like the flu vaccine the elders are getting every year. And it's mercury in the food, particularly the seafood, and mercury in the air, the atmosphere. Depending where you live and your diet, you may be consuming an enormous amount of mercury. So it would not be unusual for a person with heart failure to have extremely high mercury levels and have low vitamin D3 levels, and then, of course, they're going to be the worst case of all because they have severe poisoning of their heart muscle by the mercury, very high levels of free radical generation, impaired protective enzymes in their heart, impaired ability for their heart to produce energy, and the vitamin D is low, and that impairs the ability to resist the inflammation in the heart. And mercury is an inflammatory poison as well. People who have mercury in their system have high levels of inflammation. So all of these things are now starting to make a lot of sense, and they're all enhancing each other's findings.
I certainly, one of the things we've learned in the past is that the people over in Switzerland, the medical authorities there, will not pay for any mercury fillings. They know how toxic they are. And yet everything's been done to block that information here in the United States. Most of our dentists, you know, will simply laugh at you if you talk about, taking your mercury fillings out. And yet, of course, you know, a group of the highest incidence of suicide in the United States, I understand, are dentists. Why? Because of the toxic effect of mercury. They're working with it all the time. And certainly the dental assistants, a very high incidence, women, very high incidence of miscarriage because of the mercury toxicity. And we're constantly being poisoned by the mercury fillings we have in our mouths. And I think most people are totally unaware. I think it's such an important point.
Well, that's exactly right. And the other thing is this obsession with the flu vaccine every year. You know, you have a person that has congestive heart failure. Their doctors tell them, you need to take the flu vaccine every year because your heart's weak. Well, you're poisoning their heart with the flu vaccine two ways. One is you're injecting them with a full dose of mercury each year, which accumulates in their heart. And two is you're stimulating their immune system with powerful immune stimulators, which increases the inflammation in their body and increases inflammation in their heart. So, you know, the advice of getting a flu shot every year is probably the worst advice you give somebody with a heart failure or impending heart failure.
And yet, of course, the U.S. Public Health Service is doing everything they can to get people to take a vaccine that literally does no good, at least in most instances, absolutely no good, and a tremendous amount of harm. So why are they giving it to pregnant women and to a six-month-old children and giving it to children every year, you know, their life, you know, and then, of course, giving it to the elderly where it does so much damage? We just have to ask, how could they be so foolish as to do that? But go right ahead.
Well, it's baffling. I mean, when you look at the science, you know, and they're always screaming, look at the science. Well, we're looking at the science, and the science says clearly, mercury is a very powerful poison for the brain and for the heart in particular, and that it accumulates in the brain and accumulates in the heart. Yet, as you say, we have dental amalgam. We've got vaccines full of mercury. They're even telling people to eat fish that is contaminated with mercury, because the health benefits of the omega-3 fatty acids exceed the danger of the mercury, which is a lie. And then we've got atmospheric mercury. You know, for instance, in West Texas, has very high atmospheric mercury level. So if you're an elderly person living in West Texas, eating fish, getting vaccinated every year, and have dental amalgams, you're at an extreme high risk of having very severe heart failure. And I don't care how much digitalis or diuretics or other things you pump into that person, you're not going to make that heart improve its function. And this accounts for a lot of the resistant cases and rapidly advancing cases of heart failure.
What about the influence of fluoride, water fluoridation? I remember in the original studies back in the 1950s, they found a much higher level of heart disease, you know, in the communities that were with water fluoridation.
That's exactly right. I mean, some of the very large studies they did, I think one was in San Francisco, found a significantly higher level of heart disease with fluoridation in the drinking water, because fluoride is makes sense. Fluoride is a protoplasmic poison. It damages the enzymes that have to do with making energy. As we said, the heart never rests. It's one of the most energy, that and the brain are the two most energy-dependent organs in the body. And so here you're supplying these people with a poison to their enzymes. Well, it makes no sense. You know, none of this stuff makes any scientific sense to say, well, you need these mercury amalgams in your mouth. We know it forms a vapor and you absorb it and it's in your tissues. But it's inexpensive. And here, take this vaccine. Well, we know it doesn't work, but take it anyway. It's got a good load of mercury in it. You know, it's absurd. It's against the science.
Well, unfortunately, the average doctor isn't told that. He's just told how important it is. If you care about your patients, try to get them to take the influenza vaccine. And, well, I hate to suggest there's some diabolical element, but if there isn't a diabolical element, this will do until it comes along. Our guest is, of course, Dr. Russell Blaylock. We do hope that many of you want to get this talk. I think it's vitally important. And, of course, let me recommend once again the Blaylock Medical Newsletter. We recommend it because we really believe in it. And, of course, Russell is a friend. We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up our program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Russell, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program. I hate to interfere there, but I just have a couple of questions I wanted to ask because I think they're so important. Go right ahead.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
The coenzyme Q10 that's so important, the L-carnitine. We actually, of course, take and We have the vitamin D3, and we have it in 1,000 a unit or in 5,000 units. We think these things are important. And, of course, we actually have magnesium, and I take that. I'm going to take that every I take it every evening. And, of course, you want to, because it, of course, prevents a cardiac irregularity. And most people are deficient in magnesium, and very, very few people really understand. So I'd suggest if you're out there in the listening audience, get a copy of this tape, and then if you want to get any of these products, the coenzyme Q10, the magnesium, the L-carnitine, vitamin D, we carry all of those, and I'm not sure whether we carry the taurine or not. If you're interested in music, we have some of the most wonderful CDs. We carry them because we really love the music. It's done by a man. He's passed away now, but his name is Newell Oler. I walked into a novelty store one day, maybe 10 years ago, and there was music playing in the background, and I was so taken with it. It was piano music. Soft and really, of course, but really got your attention. Really music like I hadn't heard before on a piano. And eventually, of course, we got all of Newell Oler's CDs, and then we went down and visited Newell in Texas before he passed away. Had a wonderful time with him. But we carry his CDs. They're inexpensive, but a wonderful and restful music. So we've got just about everything that that Russell was talking about. Now, we do carry Russell's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. We think it's vitally important. We have his book, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. And then we have his book on natural strategies for cancer patients. And if you know somebody who's going into cancer therapy, they have to have this book, because it can certainly be used as a supplement to traditional therapy. And you see the people who get the chemotherapy, their hair falls out, they're deathly ill. And the cancer specialist can't figure out why the people who are following Russell's recommendations don't have the terrible reaction to the chemotherapy. That's natural strategies for cancer patients. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set, Life-Saving Secrets, and my interviews with Dr. Blaylock in the past. A great new DVD that Dr. Blaylock's talk. Now, you can get it either on CD or on a DVD. We've just finished it now. It's called Vaccines and Brain Development. Vaccines and Brain Development. And if you have children or grandchildren, and, of course, they believe that you have to take the vaccines to keep from dying, why, you need to get this DVD. You need to get our four-tape set on Vaccine Update 2009. That's the four-CD set, Vaccine Update 2009. You need to get Neil Miller's wonderful book, Vaccines, Are They Safe and Effective? That's Vaccines, Are They Safe and Effective? His book on autism. And then Neil Miller has written a 500-page book, of the Vaccine Safety Manual. That's the Vaccine Safety Manual, with a foreword by Dr. Russell Blaylock. So we do hope that many of you out there will want to go ahead and get that. And if you want to get in touch with us, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. I would simply point out that I enjoy having Russell Blaylock because I learn a lot from him. And, of course, I learn a lot from reading his newsletter, but I feel it's a privilege to be able to present him to the listening audience out there. And Russell, I've known long before he ever retired from medicine. I've known him for, I can't remember how long, but an awful long time. He's a wonderful man. He loves the Lord, and he spends full time doing the research that most people don't have the time to do, and doing a great job helping people to understand what's going on today. So, again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Go there. You can listen to us on the Internet 9 hours a day. And then please, please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And we'll be back in just a moment for the next hour at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Michael Woolsey, who's from Colorado, and he's, of course, works at the 9-1-1 issue, what really happened on September 11th, 2001, because, you see, that was really a watershed event. And as a result of that, terrible things that happened to that day, we went to war with Afghanistan, and we've killed, you know, I don't know how many Afghanistan men, women, and children, and the casualties that develop in any war. And then we attacked Iraq, and it said that we killed probably close to 1 million people there. A government, of course, wouldn't keep any track of the casualties. And then, of course, we adopted the policies of torture, and we acknowledge that torture is perfectly all right. In fact, a recent revelation, if you haven't seen them, about how they were torturing people after they'd given up all the information, and the questioners, the interrogators, didn't think that there was any more information, so they just tortured them anyway. What sort of human beings are these? And then, of course, Barack Obama has released this report, but he's forgiven everybody who carried out these atrocities. These are human atrocities. And believe me, if we ever do have world law, and I hope we don't, but if there ever is world law, these people will be called before the bar of justice and will be tried and sent to prison. But what about the high officials? What about George Bush, who said we never would torture? We would never torture. And Donald Rumsfeld said we would never torture. And they were lying to the American people. But it all goes back, what really happened on September 11th? Well, you know, there's so many questions about what happened. The way the buildings came down, it would look like just controlled demolition. I mean, if these buildings were coming down, why didn't they tip to one side or to the other? Why did Building 7 come down from the bottom rather than from the top? Certainly the center of the building caved in first, and then the base of the building gave away, and it collapsed into its own shadow. It's just like those controlled demolitions in Las Vegas. And, of course, the firemen were pulled from the building, Building 7. We came down at 5 in the evening, and they were told the building was going to be pulled, which meant it was going to be demolished. And sure enough, it was demolished. And I talked to a man who was there the following day in charge of cleaning up, and he said he was 99% sure that this was a controlled demolition. And we have an interview with him in our 9/11 update, a 4-tape, 4-CD set that's available. We have interviews with Michael Rodriguez, I think was his name, William Rodriguez, who was the last person out of the North Tower. He heard an explosion in the basement before the airplane hit the North Tower. And, of course, he saved an awful lot of people. He was a hero there until he began telling the people about all the explosions that were in the building. And, of course, they can't let the American people know. They would not allow an independent investigation. The people who were on the investigating committee, the 9/11 Commission, almost all of them came from the Council on Foreign Relations. There were people actually who worked there who disagreed, and they were just asked to leave. They weren't allowed to be on the commission if they would not be part of the cover-up. And ladies and gentlemen, you can't have a free society when you have a cover-up. What really happened that day? Well, we do know that the buildings came down, and people who studied it said this was controlled demolition. And if you actually watch the videos very carefully, you'll see on one of the towers, of course, the center of the tower, the antennas on the top of the building collapsing into the building before the building begins to collapse. That is obviously pathognomonic of a controlled demolition. Who could have done it? How would Osama bin Laden have gotten people into that building to plant the explosives, to bring it down? Well, I don't think that Osama bin Laden did it. And anybody who knows would never dare speak because they would kill him. And if you don't believe that, we've got a great new 4-tape set called The Deadly Assassins. Well, Michael, you go ahead and pick the story up from there. Tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got involved in this, and what the greatest and exciting new information is.
I first got involved in 9/11 truth. It was actually...
I'm going to have to ask you to go ahead and speak up just a little louder, would you please?
Yeah, you had mentioned some of the repercussions from 9/11 in your introductory monologue, Dr. Stan, and this was actually something that got me involved because I started to see some of the things like the Patriot Act, which was what really got my attention at first, and I had been exposed to some of the questions surrounding the events of September 11th, but I didn't really look that closely at it until I looked at the Patriot Act, and I realized that this wasn't the America that I had grown up to understand, that our freedoms were not negotiable no matter what. And so that was what initially got me involved, and all the time I'm looking into 9/11, and this goes back to 2003, 2004, and eventually I decided I couldn't keep quiet about September 11th anymore. I felt like we were not being told the truth, and I went public with it, and we started a group here in Colorado. Colorado911visibility.org is our website, and we've got a strong group here. We've had many notable accomplishments, and I've served nationally with 911truth.org on the steering committee, and I'm currently on the advisory board with them. And in 2006, I kind of found my niche in the 9/11 Truth movement with doing a podcast, and I learned about podcasting, and I had done some radio with my good friend George Flynn over at KHNC, American Freedom Network, in Johnstown, Colorado, and George had had me on his program many times, and I had sat in for him and guest hosted for him, kind of got my feet wet with broadcasting, and so I decided that I wanted to get involved in this new form of media called podcasting, because we know we're not being told the truth. We know that the media is completely controlled in America, and so in many ways we have to be the media. And so I started doing my program called Visibility 9/11 in early 2006, and I've been doing it ever since, and we focus on the events of September 11th, and I have guests on.
Now, how do you get people to listen to the program, and how many people would be listening to a podcast?
Well, we put ourselves out there through our website, which is visibility911.com, and we get people pick up our links here and there.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Michael Woolsey. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Michael Woolsey. And Michael Woolsey worked with the 911 Truth Committee, and he does a regular podcast trying to educate people. And Michael, how can people get your podcast, get your website, get your information?
Well, you can go straight to our website, visibility911.com. You can hear the show right there. I've got over 100 hours of programs that I produced myself that are all hosted right there at the website. A lot of folks get the show through iTunes, but there are many ways that you can get the show. The best way is just to go right to the website. You don't need to, it doesn't cost anything. You don't need to download anything. You can just hear it from your browser.
All right, fine. Of course, Michael is on the front lines of the battle to get the truth out about what really happened. And what do we know that really happened that day? Certainly, we know we haven't been told the truth. We know that the 9/11 Commission interviewed 1,200 people who knew something about what happened, and they sealed the testimony of 1,100 of those 1,200 people for 50 years. Oh, and, of course, they justified it on privacy basis. Oh, privacy. We're so concerned about privacy. These people wanted to testify in public. These people had stories to tell. And those testimonies were sealed for 50 years. Obviously, they're covering up. But what are they covering up is the question.
Exactly. And this has been the trend basically from day one. We did manage to get the 9/11 Commission formed, largely due to the efforts of some of the victims' families, but the 9/11 Commission was simply a whitewash, and we just know that we're not being told the truth, and when it comes to the Twin Towers and Building 7,
You talked about the idea of controlled demolition in your monologue, and for years, many of us have been saying, you know, those buildings didn't come down from gravity alone or fires or whatever the NIST investigators or the FEMA investigators were saying. And this, these investigations were further whitewashes, and they wanted us to believe that the laws of physics didn't apply on the day of 9/11. And so for years, many of us in the movement have been saying, first of all, Building 7 was a classic controlled demolition. That's beyond a doubt. All you have to do is look at it. But we also claimed that Towers 1 and 2, which were 1,350 feet tall, 110 stories, that came down at a near free fall speed, and over 1,100 of the victims were never identified. We know that those buildings were blown up, but we didn't have the backing of science. And today...
Before you go on, Michael, I just want to comment on that because I think it's such an important point. The average American doesn't understand that the 1,100 bodies were never recovered from the Twin Towers. Now, how could that be? I mean, after all, if we had this pancake affair, the building just fell, you know, a pancake floor after floor, well, you would expect, of course, that the bodies would be there. They might be mangled. They might be flattened. The desks would be there. The telephones would be there. The filing cabinets would be there. But there was nothing. I mean, there was nothing but dust. I mean, what happened to the 1,100 bodies? They just were vaporized along with everything else in the building. When they got down in the pile there at the end, why, there was steel, and there wasn't even very much in the way of cement. All the cement had been vaporized. How could you possibly have done that if the building pancake? But isn't it amazing that we never mention that today? Go right ahead.
It absolutely is amazing, and that is one of the facts that really grabbed me. I mean, they were identifying people with literally bone fragments an eighth of an inch big, and we were asking the questions, and they were indeed hard questions to ask, Dr. Stan, because, you know, it's rather morbid, but it's still, the fact remains that 1,100 families never got a body to bury, and something happened to these people, and we've been maintaining all along that there were explosives in the building. But
they couldn't be regular explosives because they vaporized the cement. They vaporized the filing cabinets. They vaporized the tables and the desks. And they vaporized the bodies of 1,100 people. Why doesn't anybody ever ask, how did that happen?
Well,
if that had happened by pancaking, why, they would have squashed it, but the cement would have been there, the desk would have been there, the telephones would have been there, the tables, the filing cabinets, but they weren't there. They just disappeared along with 1,100 bodies, and that is the strange thing that nobody wants to talk about.
Well, fortunately, Dr. Stan, there is a very vibrant and active citizens investigation going on, and today I have some very exciting news to report, and it's not brand new, but it is fairly new. There's a new paper that has just been released in a peer-reviewed scientific journal, and the name of this journal is called the Open Chemical Physics Journal, and the title of this paper is called Active Thermitic Material Discovered in Dust from the 9/11 World Trade Center Catastrophe, and this paper, it's a research paper, it's a product of about 2 years worth of research led by Dr. Stephen Jones and Kevin Ryan, among others. There are actually 9 authors of this paper. It's been peer-reviewed in the Open Chemical Physics Journal, and this paper focuses on discoveries made in the dust. And for years, Dr. Stan, I have said the key to what happened to the Twin Towers on September 11th lies in the dust.
And I think it's so important for our listeners to realize that immediately the government went in and immediately took all of the evidence away, would not allow anybody in there to get the pieces of the metal or pieces of the debris, and it was immediately put onto barges and shipped to China to be melted down. Why were they afraid for anybody to go in and collect samples? No, we couldn't do that. The government made it a federal crime for anybody to go in and collect samples, but The dust that you saw the pictures of settled on the roofs of buildings all around there, and certain people collected that dust and, of course, sent it to Dr. Jones and the others. And what did they find when they went through the dust? Will you tell them what the dust actually shows? Because, as you said, certainly, Michael, the truth is in the dust. The government couldn't fail to go around and, of course, destroy all of the evidence. They didn't get on the surrounding buildings. They didn't get the dust off the buildings. So other people got samples of the dust and found some very, very strange and really frightening things. So what did they find?
Well, as I said, Dr. Stan, I have said all along that the keys to what happened there lied in the dust. And thank God for Dr. Jones and his colleagues who have gotten samples of this dust and spent a long time now analyzing it, and the first thing that they found were these little tiny microspheres that were rich in iron. And basically they analyzed these through various methods that they use. Now, I'm no scientist, but I can read their papers, and they have published papers on this stuff. And they found these little tiny microspheres that were rich in iron, and they discovered that they contained what is known as a thermite fingerprint. Now
thermite, is it thermite or is it thermate?
Well, thermate is a variant of thermite. Now, thermite is basically finely ground aluminum powder and finely ground iron oxide, which is rust. And if you add sulfur to the mixture, the sulfur acts as what is called a eutectic, and it makes the steel melt at a lower temperature. Now, thermite has been around for a long time. It was first discovered in 1893 by a German chemist named Goldschmidt. And Goldschmidt learned that if you take finely ground aluminum powder and finely ground rust and you mix them together and then you get it to go off, that it's a very, very vigorous chemical reaction going on. And so, first of all, when they examined the dust, they found these tiny microspheres, and they found a lot of other stuff too. And there's actually a paper that has been published called Evidence for Extremely High Temperatures in the World Trade Center Destruction. And this is an important paper that folks should read. It's we've got a link to it at our website, visibility911.com. But this they showed that there were temperatures in excess of 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
And, of course, one of the interesting things is that after the building came down, there was molten steel in the basement, and they couldn't get to it. And it was there for weeks. It was still molten steel. How could you have molten steel there for weeks in the basement? I mean, what was triggering it off, you know? Do you honestly believe this, that molten steel came about because the building fell down? There were fires in the building, and the building fell down, and that caused big pools of molten steel in the basement? But nobody ever wanted to try to answer that question because, of course, what it suggests is there were certain chemical devices used to melt the major supports of that building and bring it down. And some of them, of course, went down in the basement, and they obviously had to melt the base of the building so they could bring down the buildings themselves symmetrically, perfectly symmetrically. Why didn't it maybe go down more on one side or the other and tip over? Why? Because it was a controlled, very carefully controlled demolition, an amazing example of engineering. But did we really want to believe that Osama bin Laden did that? Go right ahead.
Well, interestingly enough, the fires that burned under under the rubble went on for months after, despite the fact that there was millions of gallons of water poured on, there was fire retardant mixtures, chemicals poured on. And these fires burned under the rubble pile where there was very little oxygen. And the thermite, see, would explain this because thermite has its own oxygen in the form of iron oxide. See, we have iron oxide and we have aluminum. We have a chemical reaction going on here. And when you make these particles very, very small, down to the nano size, okay, now we're talking about a very, very high-tech explosive, and we can get into that, Dr. Stan, if you'd like to, because this is what this paper focuses on, is these little red chips. They're red and gray bilayer chips that were found in the dust in all the samples which contain active thermitic material.
And the government forgot to clean it up, dictate the evidence. Michael, go right ahead.
Again, this new paper titled...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances? Even things which can cause sickness or disease. If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Hey, it's just like you will never read about the meetings of the Bilderbergers. You just like they don't occur, and yet the richest men in the world get together right here in Virginia last year. Not a word in the controlled media, and they basically censor the news. So the last thing they want at this time is for the American people to realize that what happened on September 11th. was done not by the wicked Osama bin Laden, but it was done by people in our own government who wanted an excuse to go to war, and they've destroyed the lives of thousands of our boys and crippled thousands of them and many others. Hundreds of thousands are ill today. They have something like the Gulf War syndrome with chronic illness, just like the people from the first Gulf War. There are over 300,000 or 400,000 of our servicemen from Gulf War I and Gulf War II who are suffering from these chronic diseases that they've created for our servicemen. I believe, well, maybe it was accidental, maybe it was intentional, but the whole of the second Gulf War was totally unnecessary, and all the civilians that had died there died for nothing. I mean, after all, if we weren't attacked, then why did we go into Afghanistan? And since Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda aren't there, why are we still fighting in Afghanistan today? And nobody wants to ask that question. And then, of course, they had to admit that, well, we shouldn't have gone in. There weren't any weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. But Saddam Hussein was a terrible guy. And really, of course, isn't it wonderful we brought democracy to Iraq? Well, if we brought democracy to Iraq, why are there still so many attacks? Why are there still so many suicide attacks that are killing American boys and killing Iraqis over there? And of course, have we really brought democracy? And what about China? Should we bring our democracy to China? And what about other countries throughout the world? Should we bring democracy, say, to Zimbabwe, where our government's been keeping the dictator there, Mugabe, in power for almost 30 years? I mean, we put him in power in 1980. We've kept him in power ever since then. I mean, should we go in with our military? And certainly, what about the oppression that's existing in Somalia today with those pirates there? Shouldn't we attack them as well? And ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand that we've been lied to at every turn, and now they have the smoking gun and not a word in the media. So you go ahead, of course, what is the significance? What have they really found? They found these red ships in the dust, and of course these are nanothermite, is that right?
Yes, Dr. Stan, they've determined that they are a form of nanothermite. And just to expand on what nanothermite is, as I mentioned before, many of the folks who are out there spending a lot of time trying to debunk this work are saying that thermite is not explosive. And as I said before, regular thermite isn't. The particles are still pretty big, but yet it's still a pretty vigorous chemical reaction going on. But it turns out that the smaller that you make the particles, the faster the reaction goes. And so you can tailor thermite to act in many different ways. And Dr. Harrit, who I had on my program, he explained how the space shuttle boosters that boost the space shuttle up into space use a form of nanothermite, which burns with a lot of gases, but very slowly. But if you get smaller and smaller particles with your aluminum and with your iron oxide, then the reaction starts to get faster and faster. And this has to do with the idea that the particles get smaller. The same volume of material has more surface area, and more of the atoms lie at the surface, and so the chemical reaction is very fast. Because, see, the thermite reaction is nothing more than a chemical reaction, just like your campfire or just like gunpowder. Gunpowder is a good example. Thermite also comes in a powder. Gunpowder also comes in a powder. It's a chemical reaction that is triggered off, and it gives off gases. And so thermite can be tailored to do a number of different things. It can be tailored to cut through steel. It can, but it also can be tailored to be an explosive. And the way that you do that, or one way that you do that, is you make the thermite into nanothermite. So you make the particles very, very small so that they react very, very fast. And then you introduce a chemical, organic compound into the mixture, which will provide gases, because in an explosion, Dr. Stan, it's the gases which do all the work.
And something, if everybody's seen those pictures of the dust billowing down the streets there of New York, did anybody ever ask, how did that happen? Have you ever, anybody ever seen anything like that before? And you've never seen it before, of course. But of course, somebody planted explosives in that building and killed all those Americans. This is an open murder investigation. But I wonder if anybody will ever dare pursue it. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Michael Woolsey, and Michael, go right ahead.
Well, Dr. Stan, we left off talking about nanothermite and how it can be used as an explosive. And I mentioned that nanothermite can be turned into an explosive by adding an organic compound to the mixture. And there are many ways to do this. Now, I'm no scientist, and I hope that you will get Dr. Jones and Dr. Harrit and these other individuals on your program to explain this to your listeners more. But I feel like I have a pretty good understanding because I have interviewed these gentlemen, and I've read the paper several times, and people really need to go read this paper. Again, it's called Active Thermitic Material Discovered in Dust from the 9/11 World Trade Center Catastrophe. But nanothermite can be converted into an explosive by introducing an organic compound into the chemical reaction. And again, there are many ways to do this, and Dr. Harrit explained one way. And one of their avenues of further research is they want to look for the chemical compound of fluorine. Now, the experiments that they have performed so far, they have been unable to see any trace of fluorine or any of these other compounds due to the methods they've been using. But they're really curious because they want to find out if there's any fluorine in these little red chips. And the reason why is because there are papers which have been published out there. For example, you know, people who are developing these nanothermites, they brag about it because, you know, a lot of times they're in national laboratories or they're making munitions for the military, and they boast about how these nanothermite products can be used. And one of the ways that it can be used is by using a fluorinated polymer. Now, this contains fluorine. It's similar to what is in your Teflon, on your Teflon pans, in the Teflon coating. And the way Dr. Harrit explained it to me is you take the nanothermite, you add fluorine to the mixture, and when it goes off, the fluorine has a greater affinity for the aluminum. So the aluminum in your chemical reaction...
Hold that thought, Michael. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Michael Woolsey. And, of course, we're talking about the nanothermite that they found evidence of. And, of course, they're trying to bring this out now. But you're not going to hear this discussed in the media. Or if it is discussed, it'll be ridiculed and demonized. And how dare anybody question? I mean, oh, who would possibly think that anybody could be crass enough to kill, you know, almost 3,000 Americans that day? Well, we've killed almost a million people over there in Afghanistan and Iraq. Why should we think that these people would hesitate one little bit to kill 3,000 Americans, especially when they're able to get away with it because they control the media and they control the 911 commission. And the man who really ran the 911 commission was a close friend of Condoleezza Rice's, and he was well rewarded for his betrayal. They all were. And of course, there were one or two people on the commission who did not believe and wanted to bring the truth out, and they were summarily discharged. You could not allow the American people to understand the truth. Think of the implications. People would begin to understand we have an invisible government that really runs our government and makes mockery of our so-called democratic process. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Michael Woolsey. And Michael, I want you to get out your website again and tell people what they will find when they get there. And if you're out there, give us a call. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. What's the website, Michael?
The website is visibility911.com. I have over 100 hours worth of programs, audio programs that I've produced there. We also have a team of people who build the site and post at the blog section, so we're constantly putting up information. We've got a list of very reputable links because we know that the movement has been infiltrated and there's a lot of disinformation out there, so we're really careful about what we put up as far as what we're going to recommend for folks to go to. So the website, visibility911.com, right there at the main page, you'll see our special report.
Go ahead, Michael.
Okay, right. I'm sorry, I heard some beeping.
Well, you did hear some beeping. I mean, a little sabotage, but go right ahead.
Right there at the main page, you'll see thermite fingerprint, the loaded gun of 9/11, which will take you to our special report on this new paper that has been peer-reviewed in the Open Chemical Physics Journal. And, Dr. Stan, thermite, I'd like folks to understand what thermite is and how it works. And thermite is basically a chemical reaction. It contains aluminum, which is a fuel. It acts like a wood in your campfire. And then you have the iron oxide, which is rust, which acts as an oxidant. So whenever you have two elements that are going to react like this in a chemical reaction, you have a fuel and you have an oxidant. And in thermite, you have the aluminum, which is your fuel, and you have the iron oxide, which provides the oxygen. This is why the fires burned for so long under the rubble pile at Ground Zero, is because they had their own oxygen, see? But if you introduce an organic compound like fluorine into the nanothermite, the fluorine grabs the aluminum before the iron oxide can, which frees up the oxygen to then be available as a gas. And in an explosive, it's the gases which do all the work. You build up a pressure and it gives a shock wave, right? And it blows things up that way. This is how nanothermite is able to be turned into an explosive. And they've been looking into this idea that fluorine could have been introduced into this mixture of these little red-gray chips. And again, they have determined that these red-gray chips are an explosive pyrotechnic material. They call it a porous energetic material. They've got them to ignite in a digital scanning calorimeter, which is a device in the laboratory which gradually pushes the temperature up, and consistently, Dr. Stan, these chips ignite at around 430 Celsius, and they produce the same residue that we find in the dust, namely the iron-rich microspheres, which carry with them the thermite fingerprint.
All right, fine. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like to talk to Michael Woolsey. And now we have Michael on the line, but this is a different Michael. This is our Mike from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan.
Haven't heard from you in some time.
For coming on tonight with all this good information. And I want to run a thought by him. I think I have an idea to why as to the formation of the iron microspheres. I believe that they were formed much the same way lead shot balls were formed a couple centuries ago for the old flintlock muskets. That ammunition was formed by a dripping molten lead from somewhere up high, like in a shot tower. Like many cities still have their old shot towers still standing. They would drop the molten lead down through 100 feet of air or so into water, and on the way down, due to the molecular tension of the lead, it would form a fairly perfect sphere. And I believe that's how those microspheres were formed, that the steel in the structures of the towers were actually molten at the point of the burning of the thermite or thermate, and due to explosive forces, were sent flying into the air where they formed spheres. And I just wondered if Mr. Woolsey would think that that's a plausible explanation for the formation of those microspheres.
Yes, this is exactly how they're formed. And, of course, they're finding some spheres that have the characteristics of steel, but they're also finding the iron-rich microspheres, which are actually a product of the thermite reaction. So I think it's a combination of both, but indeed what this represents is very, very high temperatures, because in order to get these microspheres to form, you have to have the material in a molten state. For it to fly through the air, surface tension forms it into the little balls. And anybody who's ever welded or used a cutting torch knows that when you clean up, you've got all these little balls on the ground. This is exactly how they're formed. So I think you're right on the money, Mike.
Okay. And what would you say is the diameter, generally speaking, of those little spheres?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
What would be the diameter of the spheres?
Well, they were anywhere from the size of around a BB on down to I'm not sure. They were very small. I know that. I don't want to say a wrong number because I don't have that in front of me, but they were very small, put it that way.
Okay, anything else, Mike?
Good enough for now. Thanks
God bless, and thanks so much. And let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Are you concerned about what we're talking about tonight? Is it possible that the people, there is an invisible government that certainly supersedes our regular government, that there really are secret societies, that George Bush belonged to a secret society, that certainly Dick Cheney was a member of the Trilateral Commission? In fact, since between 1976 and 2008, and this organization, which according to Barry Goldwater was created to take political control of the United States government, in this organization between 1976 and 2008, either every president and or vice president, sometimes both, was a member of the Trilateral Commission. Sometimes it was the president, sometimes it was the vice president, sometimes it was the president and the vice president. But could that have happened by accident? Because there are only about 85 North American members of this organization, the ones that would be eligible to run for the presidency. Now, 11, of course, their key people are in key positions in the Obama administration and are directing the what our president is doing. Does anybody out there think this is happening by accident? You'll certainly want to get our March newsletter. I'm just finishing up. We show how they control the major banks, they control the media. You need to find out what's going on, and you need us to help to get the truth out. Go right ahead, Ray. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, Michael, Dr. Stan. And I have some questions about the debris field. Now, I understand that quite a number of several thousand people in New York City suffer from probably permanent pulmonary damage.
Lung trouble, yeah. You know. They have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease.
Yeah.
A lot of the people who worked on the pile, you and Chris, were not wearing
any
protection.
They weren't
properly outfitted. And they knew that it was dangerous, and they told the people to get in there anyway and work. Why? Because they wanted to get the evidence gone. They did not want anybody to have a chance to get any of the material for fear it would reveal the truth about what happened. And they immediately shipped it all off to China to be melted, but they forgot the dust. They forgot the dust. Oh, the best laid prime plans of men and criminals sometimes go astray. Go right ahead.
The thing that really disturbs me is the government was, you know, naturally they had to be fully aware of the content of the debris. They had to be fully aware of what it would do.
Well, that was the invisible government. Remember, we have two governments, Ray. We have a legitimate government and an illegitimate or invisible government. And it's the illegitimate government that, of course, works behind the scenes that planned this thing. I don't think that most people had any idea what was going on, but a small cadre did. And, of course, anybody who was involved is afraid to speak out because they would be executed. And maybe some of them already have been, for all I know. But go ahead.
I know one thing. Warren Buffett knew about it because he was at the Strategic Command Center, I believe, and is it in Omaha? He was there when the whole thing went down. So I know that Warren Buffett knew about it.
We've actually talked to people. There was a fellow named Chavez who actually was down at the military headquarters for all of the everything. Both Army and Air Force on that day. He was a sergeant. Chavez was his name. And we have my interviews with him, probably the last interview. He's never been heard of since he gave me the interview. But he talks about how there was a stand-down order. The Air Force was told not to try to intercept the planes. They cannot let the American people know that. And so we have the last interview with him. We tried to get him again onto our programs, and he simply disappeared from the face of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder whatever happened to him, but go right ahead.
What about the plane? Okay, the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania in the field. Now, that to me, there's something really There's something really wrong.
Well, what's wrong is there is no plain records in that field. There's just a big hole with no records there.
Right.
All the records was, you know, a mile or two away. So how could you crash a plane into the ground, of course, and no records, and yet there's a debris field of records for many miles away? They were lying to us, of course. The plane exploded in midair, and it did not crash where they told it. But that was the cover story. They couldn't tell the American people the truth about what really happened that day and that they killed all of those people. But you go right ahead.
Well, ultimately, we can anybody that has followed the thing can piece these things together and to, you know, it's incriminating towards our own government. You know,
it's not our government, it's their government.
Our government
is righteous and based upon the Constitution. Their government is a fascist organization intent upon world government and intent upon destroying the United States, and they must be exposed. We have a Constitution. It is the law of our land, and these people don't believe in the Constitution. They hate America. That is why they've destroyed our economy. They're shipping our jobs overseas, and they're going to impoverish our people. Our number once again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295, and Ray, go right ahead.
There's just one other thing. You know, I don't want to, you know, go too far off the subject, but as far as the, is there any possible way that we can reopen they can reopen this thing, and you know. Now, for all the people to know what really happened.
Michael, what do you think?
Well, I think that we need to keep doing what we're doing with our citizens' investigation, what these scientists are doing, and then the activists all around the country and all around the world, we need to keep doing what we're doing. Contact the media, contact the politicians about this new paper, because this is very important information that... I mean, we've got the loaded gun. I mean, we found the explosives. We know how they did it. So we've got the information. Of course, the media is controlled, but we still need to keep doing what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a new ballot initiative that's going on in New York City, and
right.
Folks can check that out now. That's New York City Can New York City Can initiative. It's called. And basically, they are trying to get it put on the ballot for a new investigation into the events of September 11th, which is what we're all seeking. You know, of course, we're worried about, you know, any efforts to commandeer any such effort.
Oh, yeah. The government gets involved in it, and of course, then, the whole thing... is covered up again, you know.
Right, and that's exactly what we don't want, but at least... if we can get them to at least acknowledge that and get another one, then we may have a hope. And so, you know, we're just going to keep educating people. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing, and that is to scream from the rooftops that we don't know the truth about 9/11, and we now have scientific proof to back up the fact that the towers were blown up. It's fact now. There's no theory behind it anymore.
Right. And there are probably a few people that you could... There's probably a few people in Washington D.C. left that may come out, you know, and you know, back you up.
Well, we've got to put pressure on them, and there's a lot of good groups out there. Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth is a good one, and there's a campaign underway that we talk about on my program to contact every architect and engineer in the country with one of Richard Gage's DVDs.
Let me just mention that Richard Gage is going to be a speaker at the Conspiracy Conference on June 5th and June 6th. The June 5th and June 6th, you can at the Conspiracy Conference, you can make your reservations by simply going onto the Internet and going to conspiracycon.com, www.conspiracycon.com. I'll be the lead-off speaker. Richard Gage will be there. Certainly Ted Gunderson's going to be there. They've got a great lineup for the 2 days there at the Conspiracy Conference. And so we'll put a plug in for it. We'll be having more and more people from the Conspiracy Conference's guests. But Richard Gage is going to be there. And he is, of course, the founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, doing a great job.
Oh,
Yeah, Richard really is doing awesome, and if you haven't seen his 2008 DVD, it's absolutely amazing. He goes through a PowerPoint presentation that is nearly 600 slides.
Well, we've actually seen it. Is it a new one? We saw one about a year ago.
Yeah, this is a new one. It's called the 2008 version, and it's even better, Dr. Smith.
All right, well, I'll have to have him on again, and we'll get a copy, and we'll probably carry it. Could we carry his other one anyway? God bless you. Well, hang on there, Michael. We've got a couple of minutes more with you. Ray, thank you so very much for being with us.
Goodbye.
God bless. And, of course, our guest has been Michael Woolsey, and he is, of course, trying to get the truth out. Are you concerned? Will you help us? We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program here at Radio Liberty on the tragedy of what happened on September 11th. Well, Mike.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Debris of the building number 7 the following day after it came down, and then of my interview with William Rodriguez, who was the last person out of the Twin Towers. And of course, you can hear my interviews with Jimmy, I think it's, well, I'm not sure, Walker Wallace, something like that. Anyway, he's a multimillionaire who's living and hiding in Europe because of the threats against his life. Jimmy Walters is his name. Then, of course, we have DVDs. We actually have 6 DVDs. We have Richard Gage's DVD, and we have 5 other DVDs, 911 Mysteries. We have Sydney, and then, of course, we have David Wagner's DVD. We have My Talk on what happened on September 11th, and we have 5 other DVDs. We actually have a special on those. You get all five of them, I think, for a reduced price. If you want to, that's the DVD special for 911. But you need to get the information, and then, of course, you need to understand what's going on. If you've never seen Building 7 come down, you can go to my website at RadioLiberty.com. And, of course, I just scroll down to other videos, not videos, but other videos, and look for the one on 9/11. There's a link there that'll take you. And you can watch Building 7 come down again and again. You'll see how the center of the building caves in first. At the top, that is, of course, as they were taking out the major supports, and then they dissolved the base of the building. It's obviously a controlled demolition, and all those people died for nothing, and the murderers are on the loose. And we need to get the truth out, ladies and gentlemen, and you need to help us. So our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then we have, of course, three pamphlets on 911. It's in you can just ask for the three pamphlets on 911. And, of course, they're selling at $9 for all three pamphlets. We have an update on that, 911 update on the pamphlets. They're simply compilations of five of our newsletters. But there's no question they knew the attack was coming. I mean, they planned the attack. Several of the people, so-called Islamic extremists, were actually trained at a naval base here in the United States. You're not going to hear that elsewhere. They can't let you know that this whole thing was a scam. I think these people thought that they were going to take the plane trip and everything was just going to be fine, and they didn't understand that they were pawns in the game, just as like the people in the planes as the people in the buildings. Of course, it was a conscious effort to get the people to stay in the South Building. In Morgan Stanley, there were about 2,500 people, and they were in the South Tower, and of course they were told repeatedly to stay at their desk. The North Tower had been attacked. They could see the flames. They wanted to get up and leave. They were told, no, stay at your seats. Do not get up, stay at your seats. And the man who was in charge of security ran up and down the aisles on two floors, telling people to get out. He saved 2,400 lives. They intended them to die. They intended them to die. And just as they sent our boys to Afghanistan to fight a no-win war, because it is a no-win war, after all, who's funding the Taliban? Why, they're being funded by the Pakistani government that we are funding, ladies and gentlemen. We're funding the Pakistani government that's funding the ISI intelligence, that's funding the Taliban. In fact, the Taliban are even paying people now to join their movement. They're recruiting actively. Where are they getting the money? Why, they're getting it from, a large part, American taxpayers. But we cannot let the American people do that. We're told, oh, my goodness, you know, they're getting their money from drugs. Well, let me tell you that the largest drug dealer in the world is the American CIA. If you doubt that, you need to get some of our things the essay that we have by Gary Webb, who died because he told the American people about the CIA involvement with the drugs. We have a four-tape set called Is There Really a War on Drugs? You need to get it. Our number 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection.